The challenge, the opportunity to connect. The 1960s, a time of imagination and change, a time of anger and fear. The 1960s, a program called Challenge.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Looked at our connections, our divisions, through the lens of faith. Nearly 60 years later, during these challenging times, we'll take a new look at our divisions, our connections, in a new program called Challenge 2.0. In the last edition of Challenge 2.0, we explored the gulf between promises made and promises kept in treaties signed by the U.S. government with Native American tribes. This week, we continue to explore the reality and consequences of treaty violation in part two of Paper Promises. So we'd like to begin by welcoming our two panelists from last week. We had a rich and a deep discussion on this issue of treaty rights and the larger question that is framed by that. I'd like to introduce our two panelists, Jay Julius, who is a former Lummi Nation chairman, continues to be a leader within Lummi Nation and speaks on these issues widely across the country. Terry Kylo, who serves as executive director of Paths to Understanding. Those of you who have watched this program for some time know it used to be called Tracy Levine Center. This is our new incarnation, if you will. Jay and Terry, thank you very much for joining us. As we ended last week's program, we were beginning a conversation about what might be summed up as time travel, to understand what existed, what was lost, and maybe give ourselves a vision for the future. Do I have that explanation correct, Jay? And if you could, take us through that process of time travel, as you called that.
Yeah, I think you have it correct. For us, an elder shares this often, that the way we think, the way we pass down our stories, and the importance of who we are and history, and this giver of life that is not just ours but yours as well, how important it is. The importance of time traveling for us is at a very, very, very high level. And it's important to teach our kids what once was. Because in order to see the future or build a better future than we've got here today, we have to know what yesterday was. And that's kind of one of our beliefs.
Those great-great-grandparents telling their children.
And it really, it's a common sense belief. It's a philosophy. Philosophy is important for our culture, our teachings, and our philosophy is pretty simple. And it's common sense. So for myself, I share with my son and my daughters, and those around me, they know that fishing for me is more than just fishing. Mm-hmm. When I'm on the water fishing today, I go back in time every time. And I can't put into words what happens. I can't tell you what it means to me when the orcas come around and circle my boat with my daughter on board, and just out of the blue. Moments like this in time, I know, are just a repeat of history. I know that there's a deeper connection to the genetics of the salmon, the genetics of the orcas. My family bloodline goes back so far with these of in the natural world. I'm just taken back in time, and then I'm taken back in time, obviously, with my great-grandpa, who also died when I was 5 years old. He was a fisherman. He was a hunter. He was a man of few words, but who taught us so much. And he talked about who we were and who we are, and the importance of our names and carrying these names with honor. Because 200 years from now, there's going to be a reflection on this moment in time right now. And there's a lot that goes into carrying the name Wotatlam in Tsleil-Waututh, and my son carries that name. But You know, I'm one with my father who passed away when I was seven. I'm one with him on the water. Yes, I can go to his grave and stand there and look at the headstone and the carving on top of it. But really, the connectedness, the real connection to my father in the moments in time are out there fishing on the water. And that's where I am. And I don't know if your father in the history or your mother or your grandparents in those moments in time are important, but for us, they really mean a lot. For me as the inner child within me, that means a lot. It's so important. So fishing is more than just an economic for us. It's more than just when we say culture is fish and fish is culture. It's so deep, it's so rich. And that is where I am one with my father. And that is a one example of my time travel. I am taken back to moments in time when my father put me on a boat when I was two, when I could walk with him. And this scar right here happened on a boat right after he told me not to run on the boat. And he said, you'll trip and bust your head open. Literally minutes later, I was running on the boat. I tripped over a rope and busted my head open. These moments in time are important because being connected to my father and my ancestors is such an important part of my life and who I am. And that's an example of time travel. I'm able to be one with them through this common sense, through this teaching, and held accountable. And I have a duty, a responsibility, not only to carry on and teach the importance of what it was like seven generations ago, but you know, pass that on to my son for my grandchildren and their grandchildren.
Terry, I have to ask you, as you hear the description that was eloquently given by Jay of time travel, of appreciating what came before, how much of a sense of grief do you have over the fact that many of us in contemporary society have lost that? And is there a way forward that we can recapture at least parts of that?
Yeah, I think that what Jay's and his community's wisdom is inviting us to is to undertake an overcoming of forgetfulness, to learn how to remember again. And I was told a story a number of years ago about my family. We were, on my mother's side, we were Moors, we were Muslims, and actually led Spain, the region of Spain, with a lot of religious tolerance. And there was tremendous peace. And in 1452, Pope Nicholas told the King of Portugal to, quote, invade, capture, vanquish, subdue all Muslims and pagans and other enemies of Christ and reduce their persons to perpetual slavery and take away all their possessions and their property. And so shortly before 1492, Muslims were conquered, and my family became refugees of this kind of distortion of Christianity, sort of distortion of humanity. And then, but then strangely, right, my grandfather my great-grandfather came to America in an 18-foot wooden boat with 12 other people, courageously trying to find some place to farm. But he was given land that were taken forcibly from the Palouse people in Eastern Washington State. And so, you know, I think to myself, well, wow, that's a painful memory. My family's both been the victims of that kind of domination and dehumanization. And my family has benefited from that idea of dominating other people and dehumanizing them. And that's complicated. So who does that make me? But again, within the Abrahamic tradition, we believe that God created the world good with all kinds of people in it. And that our main value in the Abrahamic tradition is to be a blessing to all of those people and to let them bless us. And part of what I hear in Jay is a longing for us not only to remember our own history, but also to go back and remember the deep values we've forgotten. And I think that's the invitation that Jay's making, so that we can then try to envision a new kind of future together, because we're all here now. And so what are we going to do now? And I look forward to that conversation with Jay too.
I think as we look at this, we get a broader sense beyond the Pacific Northwest, beyond that. But as we look at the actions that have been taken, either at the very outset the treaties were signed, depriving your people and other peoples of their livelihood, their way of life, it seems to me that the consequences of those actions and subsequently of ignoring elements of treaties certainly affect people of Lummi Nation, people of other Native American tribes, but they affect all of us. I'm wondering if you could explore, Jay, how the consequences of ignoring treaty rights ultimately affect all Americans.
Yeah, and that to me is, as I try to gather my thoughts around that, it's pretty broad. I think for most Americans, we consider the Constitution important to all of us, and you know, the treaty being the supreme law of the land under Article 6, you know, what has taken place and how much violation or inability to honor a treaty has taken place, and what has that led to? In many's eyes, I think progress is good, and I think in Native American tribes all throughout this country, there will be some agreement. But I also think that all throughout the Native American tribes in this country, not at the expense of some things are just unacceptable. And I did, even as a child, I was talked to by my grandparents and uncles and elders about what once was. And it created this anxiety within me as a fisherman that, oh my gosh, there's a possibility I may never get to fish. They're saying, and then at being a kid and hearing these things, your mind's not fully developed, and all I do and all I know and all I live for is fishing and hunting and family and community, and you know, what does our future look like? So challenges to uphold and honor the treaties, and I'll just speak for myself, 1855 and my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather who entered into that treaty thinking 6-7 generations down the road, to me, he wasn't just thinking about himself in those times. And the fact that Governor Stevens said, if you don't sign this, you'll be swimming knee-deep in your own blood. But entering into this peace treaty, this agreement, bilateral agreement between two sovereigns, I think the failure to fully honor it throughout this agreement has led to many different things. And I don't want to just poke or point, or I think we need to come together. I'm more of a we need to come together as one. We can't point the finger at one another and say, see, look what you did. Well, you did this, because that's not going to get us anywhere. You know, you mentioned Old Testament, and I think if we as leaders come together, our sovereign and all the sovereigns within the United States and the states come together, and if we lead like the book of John talks about, it's all about love. And if we really exercise those directives and what is written there with love, one of our past leaders is one of my favorite leaders. I've got a bunch of favorite leaders here at Lummi Nation, but one of my favorite of all time passed away in 2012. His name was Jimmy Wilson, and he served until he passed away, and he was part of leadership. But his slogan and what he always said when we were fighting with the state, when we were fighting amongst each other or fighting other tribes or fighting for salmon, he would always chime in and he would say, in a soft-spoken, you know, he's 80-something, he would always say this, a little bit of love goes a long way. And we need to think about that as we're leading here and making decisions here today about our water, about our salmon, about our earth, about each other, about our future generations. We have to keep that in mind.
talk to us a little bit, if you would, Jay, and then Terry, I'd like you to weigh in on that. In terms of, I believe you mentioned part of the treaty was in terms of healthcare. Talk to us about the experience of Native American communities in terms of getting adequate healthcare and aid during this time of the pandemic.
Tribal communities have faced for well over a century have been really disturbing. If you really research it and look into it, it's not a pleasant history. And even today, it's a challenge. And I think a lot of things point to it. It's not just one thing. Yes, the federal government has a trust responsibility to uphold that treaty with whatever Native nation it entered into a treaty with. And if healthcare is indeed secured in that treaty and part of their trust responsibility, then they have an obligation to do it, to honor that. And there has been a failure, and there still is a failure today, a tremendous failure today. And with the Navajos the Navajo Nation, Lummi and Navajo have a history as well. In the 40s, there were some challenging times going on, and Lummi actually provided a massive amount of fish. One of our students here at Northwest Indian College, we have a 4-year college on our reservation, and there's a Navajo doing a capstone on Lummi's delivery of salmon to the Navajo Nation many, many, many decades ago. And one of the things for myself that was really important is Lummi Nation led self-governance 40 years ago and told the United States government, look, we can do a better job. Mm-hmm. We have to report to the Department of Interior, and then all the money gets diluted and spent over here and charges over here. And then it's not something new, but we led the self-governance fight and successfully got there. And since then, you know, over $1 billion has been managed and self-governed by the tribes. So one of the things we still face today, and conversations I had with Governor Inslee, who I consider a friend, and I've worked a lot with him, and it's been an honor to work with him over the years, is when we ask each other, when we go back in time to 1855, two sovereigns came together, and I'll just speak in terms of for Lummi, the United States and Lummi Nation, as two sovereigns came together and entered into an agreement, a treaty. Yet today in 2020, 2019, since the treaty, even as a sovereign, we have had an inability to stop the encroachment in the stealing of our tax dollars. So economic development and development as a normal government has been a tremendous challenge for tribal governments and tribes to promote entrepreneurship, because the government needs to rely on taxation. And still today we have an inability, because no one wants to buy, Terry, you're not going to want to come buy a can of Coke or some groceries from Lummi if you got to pay double tax. And nobody wants to pay double tax. So that's still a challenge we face. And I'm confident, though, and I know legislation passed just this year, and I'm thankful for that. But once we get to a point where, and my elders will get mad at me when they watch this, because they stress that there's an obligation there. There's an obligation to honor the treaty. Every square inch of land within Washington state was not conquered by the United States. A treaty was entered into, and land was ceded in this agreement. There was a heavy, 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 heavy price that we paid in order to enter into this treaty, and we sacrificed millions and millions of acres. So healthcare, education, and an ability to harvest is not too much to ask for, but it's been a challenge. So a lot of things really are a part of that, and Navajo Nation is definitely facing some challenges, and We at Lummi are just fortunate that our doctors were way ahead when it was being called a hoax and when it was being called whatever it was. Our doctors were panicking, and thank God our leadership was wise enough to listen to the doctor who many thought were over exaggerating, who bought test kits and who bought masks and who prepared for this in late January and early February.
Terry, as you listen to Jay's description of these stories, much of your ministry is involved building bridges, of countering dehumanization, of seeing opportunities to share. What opportunities strike you as being real possibilities to correct some of these situations?
Well, you know, so I grew up in a small town that benefited from the land from the Treaty of 1855. And I remember the way the men would sometimes talk about Native peoples, and in such a derogatory and dehumanizing way. After I heard stories of Jesus, inviting us to love our neighbors, after watching Jesus love a Samaritan person by speaking positively about them, and I think that there is in this time with our national leadership, but also with media that speaks in many different messages, a temptation for us to follow along with dehumanization. That since some have benefited from the dehumanization of others, that we should go along and continue it, because it makes us feel justified in receiving those benefits. And I think we have a real opportunity here to recognize the stated values, to realize the stated values of the United States, which is that all people are made in the image of God and have certain inalienable rights. And the question is, are we going to lean into that and realize that value, or is it simply going to be a kind of a cover language that covers the kind of treaty violations, which are somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 treaty violations between the federal government and the peoples of indigenous to this land. And I hope that we can begin to realize some of our deepest values together and begin that process through a kind of listening to the wisdom and to the stories and to the time travel of our indigenous sisters and brothers.
Jay, you've offered such wisdom and perspective to us throughout the elements that we've discussed on this program. What I'd like to do as we wrap up this program is to get a sense from you of what issues that are either explicitly defined in treaties or implicit to it, what issues that will affect your people and the broader Pacific Northwest most concern you, not only for the coming year, but say for the next decade?
Well, obviously one of my big concerns directly tied to the treaty for future is salmon. I think when you look at our lifestyles, our ways of life, everything points back to the salmon. And where we are today, and if we keep going down this path, the salmon's future is dim, and it already is dim, and we are fighting the good fight. But you know, the salmon are for us kind of the miner's canary. And you can look all around us. You look at the orca situation, you look at the near extinction, you look at the concern. You know, Lummi is deeply concerned for a deep history. Our elders call it the beings under the water, so rich with life, such a deep history, these creatures that were a part of who we are and connected to who we are and one with us for so many centuries, fishing side by side with us. They're struggling to eat. They're starving. They are dying every year. Their matriarchs are struggling and dying. Their children are dying at birth. Mothers who lose their child at birth last year, we all saw, the whole world saw. They sent a message, and their inability to speak, she sent, that mother sent such a powerful message, pushing her daughter and crying and telling the world, look at what you're doing. For 17 days, she pushed her daughter or her baby around and then finally let her. I mean, that is some deep mourning and uncertainty for a future of her entire generation. For me, it's the salmon. For me, it's the Salish Sea. For me, it's that's who we are, our footprints, our canoe paddles, the noise of our paddles, and the songs of the orca and the songs that we carry. That's concerning for me as we go into the future, that should be protected by the treaty, and hopefully will be, God willing, will be. That is one of the most significant.
My wife and I just recently redid our wills. And in our wills, we acknowledged that our families benefited from the Treaty of 1855 in a way that was unjust in many respects. And so we put in some money for the Palouse people in Eastern Washington, and also for the Samish Nation, in which used to inhabit the land here, own the land on which our house is. And I just want to encourage people, even challenge them, to consider some of that kind of restitution as a beginning of a conversation and healing.
I thank you both very, very much for your eloquence, for your wisdom, for your sense of vision. And I hope there is so much more we could discuss. I hope we'll have an opportunity to have that discussion in the future. But I thank you both very much. And I thank each of you for joining us on this week's edition of Challenge 2.0, and hope we'll see you again next week. Thank you very much. If you've enjoyed this program, please give us 5 stars and leave a review. If you can also tell one friend about the show, that would be great. You can find us on social media at Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. You can find out more and financially support the show at PathsToUnderstanding.org. The program is hosted by executive producer Jeff Renner, produced by Tom Butterworth and John Sharifi. Cameras and audio by Rich McAdams, Tom Butterworth, and Dean Cuccia. Ian Olson is the production assistant.